We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Welcome to the show, Higher Side Chatters. Drink a little drink, smoking a little smoke. From sunny San Diego, just trying to cope, I'm Greg Carlwood. Today's going to be a pretty out there show about crop circles and ET contact with a phenomenal couple of guests, Colin Andrews and his wife Cynthia. Both have been trying to peek behind the curtain of one of modern day's most profound mysteries and shed some light on paranormal phenomenon, what type of intelligence is behind it, and what it all means. Before we do that, I wanted to say thanks for everyone listening and emailing me in about liking the show. Thanks for spreading the word. I hope to build the best possible conspiracy and paranormal show where you don't have to pay to see the archives, you don't have to pay to hear the second half of the show, and as the show grows, so grows what I'm able to do. Next month, we'll be giving away at least $100. That's awesome. How much money is Alex Jones giving away? I'm just saying, people want me to have Russell Brand on, people want me to get Roseanne on, believe me, I'd love to do all that, but we just aren't at that level yet. But the more people share the show and review it and support it, the more clout we'll have, and the farther reach we'll have, and I'll do everything I can to bring phenomenal shows to you every step of the way. But help me help you, share the show, stick with me, and we're gonna fuck some shit up, and in a good way. I just wanted to remind people quickly on the details of the THC Money Bomb, where I'm giving half of all donations received between now and episode 85 and gifting that back to one of the listeners. We'll donate a little bit and you'll have a shot. Full details at thehiresidechats.com/donate. Here's a little news update from a man, Rob Davin, at Darkspace TV. And then we're going to get weird with Colin and Cynthia Andrews. All right, people. Usually I would be joined now by my main man, Rob Davin from Darkspace.tv, but due to my own incompetency and unprofessionalism, that isn't going to happen. I've been having some serious computer issues, and Rob Davin waited for me for quite some time. God love him, but I didn't make it. I've just been rebooting Windows at random, trying to find a Windows CD, and rolling the dice, and finally, we have a winner, and now here we are. So let me present to you some of the news that I found interesting this week before we have a complete and total breakdown of the computer nature. Well, one of the weirdest deaths I've heard in a while, Romano Diaz, age 55, was given what he thought was a health drink by his daughter, but after drinking half a glass, he fell ill and died. Deborah Dolson, the partner of Mr. Diaz, said that he opened it and found a cork under the cap. He drank some and then complained about the taste. Then he said his throat was burning and his last words were, and I quote, "I am in trouble here. I am dying. I am dead." Police tested the bottle and determined that it contained $34,000 worth of pure methamphetamine. The bottle had been labeled a health drink. His daughter said that she had received a package with the correct mailing address, but with another name on it. She held onto the package for 6 months before opening it and gave it to her father sometime after that. Detective Inspector Ian Simmons explained that since $34,000 is such a significant amount, it was likely headed to a dealer. Simmons also said that it's not the kind of drug they normally encounter in Cambridgeshire, England. and he is convinced that neither Diaz or any of his family was involved in any drugs. Therefore, he is determined that the case is an accidental death. What would we do without Detective Inspector Ian Simmons? A little respect, please. And we got a little conspiracy news in the comedy world this week. Very exciting stuff. It turns out Andy Kaufman may really be alive. The story begins at the 9th annual Andy Kaufman Awards, which were held on Monday night at New York's Gotham Comedy Club. While on stage, Michael Kaufman, Andy's brother, began to talk about his sibling's legacy and then revealed that he doesn't actually know if Andy's alive or dead. He then told a story about how back in 1984, he was going through some of his brother's things and he discovered an essay written by Andy about how he would go about faking his own death. The piece said that he would eventually reappear on Christmas Eve 1999 at a particular restaurant. And when that date came, Michael went to the place to find out the truth. Well, Andy was a no-show, but that night he was given a letter from a stranger that turned out to be a letter addressed to him from Andy. In the letter, the comedy legend explained how he wanted to have a normal life and that, quote, he'd met and fallen in love with a woman and had a daughter, and that he doesn't want Michael or anyone to say anything about it while their own father was still alive. Andy and Michael's father, Stanley, died this past summer, and Michael told the audience at Gotham Comedy Club that a month after the loss, he got a call from a young woman who told him over the phone that Andy was alive and that he had actually been paying attention to the Andy Kaufman Awards from afar and was very proud of the event. Michael then asked the crowd if that young woman was in the audience, and then a 24-year-old woman stood up from the back and made her way to the stage. The report at the Comics Comic, which was written by a writer named Sean L. McCarthy, doesn't mention exactly how this young woman was connected to Andy, but Kelly Dwyer, an Andy Kaufman Awards finalist who was there that night, said in a Facebook post that the mystery guest was Andy Kaufman's daughter. In an update from The Hollywood Reporter, they've received some quotes from Ed Kavanaugh, the showroom manager at the Gotham Comedy Club, who has confirmed what went down on Monday night. He insists that the event wasn't a hoax, saying that without a doubt, this was not a prank. And he also noted that Michael was clearly emotionally impacted. While any videos of the night have yet to be found, an image did appear with McCarthy's post of both Michael Kaufman holding a picture of his brother and the mysterious 24-year-old woman who came on the stage. I would love to see Andy Kaufman still be kicking it. In one last news tidbit, something I found interesting from the Business Insider, the Iranian Air Force is chasing UFOs and they think they've discovered a new type of American drone. Well, of course, but what's interesting about this drone is its flight characteristics. An Iranian pilot is quoted as saying, some of these astonishing flight characteristics include the ability to fly outside the atmosphere, attain a maximum cruise speed of Mach 10, whatever that is, and a minimum speed of zero, the ability to hover over the target. These performances, along with their powerful ECM, make the F-14s unable to operate their weapons. They've attempted to intercept these drones several times, but have not really been able to do so. But after 2 years of research on the object's flight portfolios and examinations of remnants of a crashed example recovered in 2006, the Iranian army specified that they were indeed U.S. intelligence drones. It doesn't say how they knew that, but I think it is safe to assume it's either us or it's aliens. That does it for me, folks. I'm Greg Carlwood, filling in for Rob Davin, who will be here next week to give you yet another edition of Higher Education. Here is my interview with Colin and Cynthia Andrews, largely about their book On the Edge of Reality. It's going to get weird. Don't worry about it. Just enjoy it. Folks, today is quite an honor because I've always been fascinated with the idea of extraterrestrial contact, and one big tasty slice of the ET contact pie is the crop circle phenomenon. Nearly everyone has heard of the term crop circles, but most people never look much further than the surface, and as we know, the surface is often coated in a thick, oily discharge spit out by the manipulation arm of the global elite, the mainstream media. And in this case, it has seared deep into the minds of most people that two guys with a couple of boards and strings can produce these intricate designs overnight and that there's nothing else to it. Now, I consider that a common dismissal by people led astray that haven't dug any deeper, and I'm sure my guests today would agree. In fact, Colin Andrews coined the term crop circles, an impressive bullet point on the resume to me, and in 2013 marks 30 years of investigation into strange phenomenon, including UFOs, weather manipulation, orbs, quantum physics, global consciousness, secret technology, and of course, crop circles. Along with his wife Cynthia, they have put out a new book, On the Edge of Reality, which details the discoveries made along this 30-year journey and tries to find some explanations for these high weirdness events. Colin and Cynthia, welcome to THC.
Great to be with you, Craig. Thanks very much.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Oh, thanks for coming. I assure you the pleasure is mine. I'm so psyched to speak with you guys. Your book is very expansive, covers so many interesting topics, but I'd really like to start with the crop circle phenomenon. As I mentioned in the intro, plenty of the established media outlets have run these stories about hoaxers being able to produce crop circles overnight by breaking them down with a board under their feet. Yet, in other cases, all the moisture or color has been removed from the stalk, which is a whole different thing. Some cases seem to be obvious communication, and in fact, the Bulgarian government has come out a few years ago publicly, and they said they're using crop circles to communicate with some strange intelligence. So let's define the phenomenon as best we can for the people. Try to give us the cliff notes to your three-decade-long investigation into these things. You know, what's changed? How has the research evolved? How has your opinion changed? What conclusions have you made? All that good stuff.
Right. Well, there's 2 hours or 3 hours right there, Greg.
I know. I'm a lazy host. It's a big
yeah,
question.
The first question. You're going good. Well, breaking this 30 years down with regard to the crop circles, one has to say there are many pieces to the pie. And pieces to that pie, the major pieces, are people do make some and many of the crop markings, and we can talk about that in some detail. Two is that there remains a major mystery, but that most of that relates to an intelligent component to the function of those that are made by people and how and why that happens, and those that we cannot explain. Now that might, and that really is putting it simplistically, and yet it kind of poses significant questions, as if, you know, where is the intelligence coming from, and how could it influence people in any way who are making many of the crop markings? And I thought to kind of put that in the program early, Greg, because, you know, for anybody that's been following this through since 83, you know, when I coined the term crop circles, right through to the current day, will know, as you rightly said in your setting, you know, introducing the program, that the media and the governments were certainly very keen to de-escalate the general interest in this by telling us all they were made by Doug and Dave back in 1990. They were very, very anxious, I think, to jump onto that bandwagon to try and de-escalate the general growing interest of the public itself. So, you know, that's kind of a very kind of rapid overview. But where I came to, and this is another kind of significant bullet point, in the year 2000, when I, at that time, for a two-year period of 1999 and 2000, was being funded by Lawrence Rockefeller in New York for a very specific project of looking at the people making some, because we wanted to look to see where the resources should be best spent. And what came out of that is worth putting in at this point in our program.
Yeah, sure.
And that it was that a significant number, 80% in fact, during that two-year period in England alone, we had names of people, how they made them, where they made them, leaving 20% that couldn't, and that's a large number and often overlooked, but 20% that we could not begin to account for. But there was a common denominator between both of those findings, 20 and 80, and that was there was a mind at work, an intelligence which was non-human, that was encompassing the entire field. And so there's the debate right there.
You know, I wasn't even going to bring up Lawrence Rockefeller, but I had a few other people bring that to my attention when I mentioned you were going to be on the program. And of course, on a conspiracy show, everybody's ears have got to perk up when they hear a name like Lawrence Rockefeller. It makes people a little bit skeptical when they hear about that kind of involvement. Do you think that's been harmful at all to your message or to the research? Has it made it more difficult to get your point across?
Well, it has in the way that you've just described it. I mean, yes, and I understand that too. And there's good reason, I think, for us to suspect any of the big names in politics, to suspect that there might be alternative agendas. So I totally understand where that comes from. But I can tell you absolutely black and white and totally truthfully that what happened, as far as I was concerned, I didn't approach him. This is Lawrence Rockefeller personally down in New York. It's not the foundation. I didn't approach him at all. I had a phone call to the office, you know, asking from his right-hand woman at the time that Lawrence Rockefeller was looking at the UFO subject in some detail, the disclosure program in particular, and would I be interested in some funding. Well, of course I was interested in some funding because we'd never had any.
Hell yeah.
Not from anybody anywhere apart from my family and myself. That's the only help we've had on funding. So in came Lawrence Rockefeller, and what they ask, it's worth me fully saying it because I don't want to leave anybody wondering where I'm coming from in this. I accepted that, yes, I would like some funding, but that I must be in control of what I'm going to be doing with this funding. And I was asked to draw up two programs that needed funding that could accelerate, in my opinion, our understanding of the mystery. And I chose, it was, you know, magnetometer surveys, because as an electrical engineer myself, we had some very interesting results from those that we couldn't explain, that is, from those in the 20% that we couldn't explain how they got there, did show some of them magnetic anomalies. So I chose to fund a project into that. And the second one, and this is where I get into trouble in this area, was to look at people making them, because we wanted to know what they were making and, you know, the full gambit to know where to put resources. And so that was it. That is the only involvement. I drew up the reports. I coordinated both of those projects, and the reports went back to Lawrence Rockefeller as a private privately funded projects. But that said, I have always been very open and have actually released documentation about all of the findings, even though he funded them and they were for him. You know, I'm a public person doing a public job. And so everything has been released. The assessment and how it was calculated is public domain. And also, the magnetometer surveys have been made public.
Yeah, and if I could jump in really quickly, I think, you know, what you have pointed out is the inherent conspiratorial thinking that we all sort of have these days, which makes it even more important that Colin has always disclosed from the beginning his involvement with Rockefeller, so that it isn't something that was hidden behind the scenes. But I think that, you know, in evaluating what he did with it, although when Colin came out with the research findings of the 80-20, he was ostracized totally from the research community and his name, you know, trashed in the mud and hate mail and the rest of it. And 10 years later, people are now looking at his research and realizing that everything that he found then is showing up to be true now. But beyond that, in the 10 years that he had to then say, what does this mean? You know, if so many of them are handmade, what does it mean? His research with the hoaxers has shown that there is this deeper element of interactive intelligence that's manipulating all of us, people who are making them, people who are researching them, and reveals a much deeper connection to what's going on than we ever thought. I mean, we can all look at the things like you were mentioning in the beginning, that there are some real mysteries, the alarms that went off in Colin's house, the circles that are made from the loss of chlorophyll from the plants. There are some things that could not be made by people, and they're part of this huge matrix that includes the ones that are made by people and the types of events that happen to them.
There's really the main reason, Craig, why, you know, the book was written, because it does need some very careful analysis and some very careful out-of-the-box consideration when one talks about intelligence and intelligence that's influencing the thought process and manufacture of certain designs in our landscape by people. That raises extraordinary questions as to, you know, freedom of choice. I mean, when this book has been fully read and fully evaluated by most people, and they come to the realization that their favorite pop star, their favorite politician, or at least the one they may have put into power and later seemed to be, you know, what it often turns out to be, but, you know, that, right, you know, that all of us in all fields, whilst we may think that every thought is our own, that when your actions dovetail into other actions being taken by other groups of people and played out in the same field, the same night, with the same pattern or associated patterning, then we've got something we've got to be talking about. And that's exactly what has been happening, but has been missed by the, I think the urge is to perpetuate the kind of religion, because it has the elements of spiritual, you know, thinking and religion, out of designs we don't understand. So rather than, taking that, the sense and the feeling that you get and perpetuating it with a myth, it is not really doing oneself any real, good. It's not a just cause to perpetuate something that is not real and not true. Believe me, the mystery inside of here is bigger than anybody had possibly imagined, but it requires truth to get to it. And, you know, hence why we're very pleased to obviously participate in your program and others to make sure that people really get this, that this isn't a matter of any personal ego or animosity here. This subject does truly encompass everything that we do on a daily, regular basis. And we are watching our world changing at a critical point in our evolution. And so, you know, this is just a small part of it.
I appreciate that. And you guys touched on so many interesting threads in that. Man, well, let's look at the idea that some non-human intelligence is trying to steer the human race into some type of awakening or evolution. That's really what the first part of your book is about, all the reasons that someone could step back and look at the global landscape and say we're at a fork in the road of either a complete destruction or changing the way we do things. I mean, economic collapse, high levels of government corruption and civil unrest, even more natural things like earth changes and solar flares. And these things have been talked about for quite some time, and it's been weaved through the ET contact and the messages people say they've received from abduction situations. And their message is always right in line with that stuff, saying like, hey, you're marching towards a cliff. You better change the way you're doing things. But their influence seems so subtle for such a serious cataclysmic possibility that it just seems so subtle.
I agree.
And people are pretty dense. But what are some of the other ways that this intelligence is trying to deliver the message and help us to better our ways?
Well, I think it's the way that we grow and evolve, even if we, in all of the subjects, in whatever's look we're looking at on the television screen or what we sense in our body when we look outside at the environment, when we experience that she's changing, our Mother Earth is changing. You know, the air we're breathing, the water we're drinking, the events that are unfolding on our television set, these are all things that influence our evaluation of life. And it's hard to imagine anybody could be untouched at some level by this period of time that we're living in. There's never, I don't think, in my opinion, looking at the whole gambit of things we've looked at for the book and in what we study in consciousness, that there's probably ever been a period of time like this in the history of our planet. And there's a lot that would support that. You know, if you're looking at climate change, global warming, and the 800,000-year ice cores that they're now looking at, whether we're looking at the fossils of 6 million years ago, there's nothing in the ice cores or in the fossils that begin to relate to the composition of our atmosphere today. And so we are at a critical time, and that goes for all life forms on our planet. You know, whether we're looking at, you know, and considering what the Mayan elders, you know, what those people they were looking at astronomy and astrology. They were looking and evaluated what they saw as a 25,000-year cycle. You know, most people have already passed the December 21, 2012 by saying, well, it didn't happen, did it? You know, when in fact, you know, Cynthia and I wrote the book 2012 for the Complete Idiot's Guide series, and there was really not a researcher out there that ever said it was the end of the world. Hollywood did, produced a movie about it, the media jumped on board it for fun, and yet not only was it one of the most accurate prophecies that we've come across, you know, a tremendous piece of work, for that period of time when, as I think you kind of defined it when you were setting the program up without, you know, using the term 2012, because what happened in 2012 was exactly what the prophecy spoke about. An end of a period in time, financial collapse, well, that's just about what happened when the banks and governments stole our money. You know, then they came back and the bailout and asked for it again. I mean, all these things, and we're not over it. You know, this has been a global repercussion, or literally, of a financial collapse, and they went on to say much more. So, and it's 2012 not only happened, it's still happening. That's the crossroads we are on.
Yeah, and to add to that, back to your question a little bit about how are these messages getting through, it seems to me in my private practice that I see every single day that people are having more and more non-ordinary reality types of experiences, and it's becoming more and more commonplace. And I think that that's kind of the wave of this change, is person at a time through individual experience.
Yeah, it seems like an odd approach.
You know, just again, sorry, Greg.
Oh, no, go for it. I'm here all the time.
Well, I was just going to add to what Cynthia was saying, that, you know, in very brief terms, you know, we have seen through people who have been regressed, or indeed that have recounted in some way the memory of an ET experience, a close encounter with extraterrestrial. You know, there's information they have gathered in those experiences that usually conveys the same message. And I've been privileged in my work to come, in touch with many of them, you know, the Barney and Betty Hills and Travis Waltons, each, you know, who I've interviewed, and, you know, myself, and it's in the book, you know, it's something that I had not spoken very much about until recent years. I had an experience myself twice when I was 5 years old. You know, there's a consistency in the information. We had this very strange voice came over independent television news in Great Britain in 1977. Coincidentally, if that truly is, you know, how we perceive coincidence, I happened to be literally listening to the news and testing my first tape recorder when that happened, and I recorded it. You know, that with my actually just under a million people, and again, consistent message. So, you know, crop circles have revealed it. Those more simple forms have come into that, and electronic voice phenomena too. So anyway, that's kind of a little bit more probably than you wanted, but those are avenues through which this very consistent message about this chaotic period and environmental change, is entering our society.
I would love to believe that we're going through a great awakening. I hope that we are. I think it might have even been my birthday wish a few times, but I don't know. I acknowledge that a storm is brewing, but I'm not convinced that it's not more than just hot air. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the savior motif.
Yeah.
I think there's an element of that involved, where people are subconsciously saying, yeah, I can't wait for this astrological switch to flip so we can enter this age of awakening and do away with all this corruption and destruction. And I'm just kind of sick of all the waiting. You know, we have to do something. We need to be talking about things. We need to be focused on creating the change, you know?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Absolutely, and that's what this whole idea of an individual, these individual experiences are pushing people to do something. You can't just sit and wait for spirituality to take hold.
No.
It has to be personal action and personal responsibility. You hit that exactly on the head.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I would also really agree with is that it's a polarization of you know, people happening right now. We see it in our politics. We see it kind of all around us. And so it's like, yeah, some people really do seem to be getting the message and maybe not acting as fast or as intently as they could, but getting the message, and then a whole bunch of people who are resisting it so intently that they would, you know, will fight for the right to destroy, you know?
Yeah, I'm absolutely. I mean, if taking your point there, Greg, that, you know, if we stand back, I mean, if we literally allow ourselves to continue to be led and not to lead our leaders, if we really truly have still not made our minds up who we want to be, then we will go the way, unfortunately, that we've been heading. And that's not a good place. I mean, I don't think this is any time to be hairy-fairy about, you know, who we are and what our views are. We have to step forward. We have to be, you know, have to play out and voice and play out what we believe, or we're in trouble. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No doubt in my mind, man. I'm with you. You know, one of the other big questions people ask is the level of involvement our governments have and how seriously they take this. I mean, on one hand, you got stories like the infamous meeting with the Greys by President Eisenhower. And on the other, as I'd mentioned, you have the Bulgarian government going public, saying they're communicating through these crop circles. To what degree would you say our world leaders have a handle on ET contact? Or do you think in most cases they're just as confused as the people?
Well, I think there is confusion, but that said, I've been much closer than most people to some of this. You know, I used to attend meetings at the Minister of Defence in London directly with Nick Pope, who was head of the UFO project for them, and have had, you know, interaction with some government officials here, and certainly most of the leading edge researchers in this subject, many of those who have claimed to have been in close contact, you know, including, as we were saying earlier, Travis Walton and so on. I don't have any reason to suspect that they are not way better informed than we are, and I'm certainly talking about US and UK, many of the European, Brazilian governments. These are governments that have been less than straightforward and less than honest with the public, but have had enough whistleblowers in their ranks to be totally convincing that they know an awful lot more than we do. It would be hard to imagine that the superpower of the United States, who have people in control of their nuclear missiles, Captain Robert Salus, for example, the Air Force officer who was in charge of the Minuteman missiles, when he was sat at the controls of these things underground and received a message from above ground level that there was an object hovering over that particular silo. And during a period of a few moments, the systems that control these nuclear missiles were deactivated without a human being touching them. Now, that's been reported up the line. Robert Salus has gone public on this. Others have come forward who were under him at that time. And other nuclear silo missile facilities at that time. And each of them were taken offline. Now, that's one of the most serious implications for national security. It is impossible that the United States government would not have taken this at the, you know, as extraordinarily serious. And, you know, in my own country, I'm a joint British-American citizen now, but back in Great Britain, we had in Norfolk a very similar situation on Christmas Day in 1981, when UFOs appeared over the base. They were holding the F-111s and the cruise missiles on British territory because of the political situation that was we were experiencing between East and West at that time. And a similar situation played out. The head of the Ministry of Defense of all land forces in Great Britain made a public statement that this is something of the greatest and gravest concern. So, you know, they must stop playing these games and at some point trust the public, get on the same page and the same sheet, and let's all evolve, because consciousness can only move on and evolve with all of that we have at our, you know, at our in our power as human beings when we deal with the truth. And the governments are not, some governments are not helping in the process, which is our born right to evolve as individuals on this planet.
Yeah, man, cannot argue with you there. Total agreement. And I wanted to get back to crop circles a little bit. I mean, you have several really compelling examples of paranormal activity and synchronicity going on while you were doing these investigations, and also a lot of strange things have been reported by people who just planned to make a crop pattern in the night but ended up actually seeing entities or strange balls of light, having weird time anomalies. Which have been some of the most interesting examples to you guys that you've seen or heard about or experienced?
Well, you know, it ranges from other people's, many other people's experiences, and again, there are many of them in the book, to personal experiences. And, you know, when I kind of do interviews, I tend to come to the personal experience, although, you know, I know a lot about other people's, because I can certainly vouch for them. You know, I can vouch for them, and in many cases, I've had witnesses with me. But the most convincing that, you know, I guess that point where, as an engineer, you know, I was with a small team of scientists and engineers initially looking at this. And what we did is what most scientists do, is gather data. That's how it began. We gathered where they were coming, their measurements, their alignments to the magnetic north. We looked at plant analysis, magnetometer, any kind of correlations in the data, of which there were only two, which is spiritual archaeological sites and water collecting points. We looked at all those things, and then we were being forced to look out way outside the box, because some strange things began to happen, and they began to happen to each of us in that small team, and then we began to hear of them happening to the farmers, to people even making them. And these, and I'll give you an example, I could give you many. I laid in bed this particular night, and I'll use the term meditated. Some people will say pray. You can, you know, put different terminology to it. But from a very sincere place inside of me, I meditated and requested, that would be the way to put it in simple terms, a particular design which I was visualizing. Now, you only have my word for this. I've stated it 1,000 times and did every day to my family after this happened. I visualized it, a design which had never appeared. It certainly was not in the database, never appeared on our planet as far as we knew, in vegetation. This was a traditional, a powerful spiritual symbol of a Celtic cross. And I asked in two parts, one for this to appear and as close to my home as possible. I was still on that bed from that night. This was now the next morning, still on the bed. I had not left the room. I had not shared that with anybody. It was a private experience, a private moment. Telephone goes. It's Jeff Smith. Documentaries have been made about this since then. This is all checkable. It's all been done. It's films have been made of it. Telephone is Jeff Smith, a farmer close to my home, to the southeast, telling me that in his field, where there had been patterns over the years, there's a new one. He's harvesting, and he's given us 2 hours to get an aircraft up or come to the field. We got an aircraft up within the hour, and looking down into that field was a very touching moment when the very symbol that I had requested has now appeared in his field, not knowing at that time, we later did, of course, know this was the last field with vegetation in it capable of receiving the artist's hand, as it were, to create a design in. That field boundary was 2.5 miles from my home, as close to my home that was conceivable at that time. And I had to look at the realms of possibility of that happening, and that was the beginning of a whole series.
Wow, that is pretty amazing, man.
Yeah.
I am so hungry for a personal experience, been hungry for it for years. I'm wondering if it'll ever come. Sometimes I'm starting to think that maybe these types of life-changing events are only going to happen to people who really need that huge of an event to put them on this type of path, and maybe I'm not going to get it because I'm already kind of on that page, but it seems like you were too. But I'm sure a lot of the audience is really dying to have some type of ET contact experience. I mean, is there any advice you could give on how to have one? I guess just meditate and ask, really.
You know, I have to add there that is really funny, because I think Colin and I feel the same way. You know, we're surrounded by people who have, you know, like experience after experience after experience, and we're looking at each other. You know, we will have just left when everybody saw the crop, you know, the UFO arriving, or we will have just, you know, missed it by seconds or whatever. And when you put, you know, over our lifetimes, all the experiences we have had together, it looks really impressive. But there were many years in between each one of those. And I think the thing, you know, about calling them to you has a lot to do with how well you're preparing yourself and your system for these kinds of encounters. And as you said, meditation is probably our key tool to preparing our bodies to interact in more ways and our mind.
Yeah, I think also, Greg, sorry, I was just going to add, because there's a very interesting little thread here, is that I've got the sense out of the, as Cynthia was saying, you know, over 30 years, you know, there have been probably a dozen very impressive high strangeness experiences, and some of them have actually occurred to both of us at the same moment. But that said, what I do what my first co-author and co-researcher and friend used to say, this is such a strange field, you know, takes two steps forward, and allow yourself to maintain humor and take one step back, because this would blow your head off in many ways. But what you see when you step back, and I have seen, is what I believe is a very vital, critical program that's running. This is on a timeline from the starting point, and don't ask me what that was or when it was, but to where, and to where it's going is critical. It will involve, if we get there, many, many, many inputs. It's like we say in the book, moves on a chessboard. There are only so many, and each move has to be the right one to achieve that successful final move. And that's how it feels to me. This strange voice phenomena is one that really tends to steer me in that direction. And this has not only happened to me, it's happened to a lot of other people, many of them very well known. I've spoken to them privately. Most people want to keep it private. Others have gone public. That a voice, it's usually a single sentence, will come out of thin air. Sometimes it's implanted in your head. I'm going to use the term kind of suggestions. Some people will say instructions. And they are given on specific moments and specific times and specific subject matter. It's like whoever's controlling this program decides that, hey, we need this discussed right now. We have to include this piece or that move because it's vital to what's going to happen in 3 weeks' time and in a month's time. And so we come to this fork in the road that you were referring to, where everything has to be in place before it either shifts left and is the end of it, or it shifts right and everything moves. The paradigm that awaits, that is potentially there waiting, will depend upon many actions. Our thought process and our actions play out on a very strict timeline. And I think that, you know, when you're saying why is it then, really, another way of putting it, that some people are having these experiences, and why is it others yearn and don't get them? I believe, because I've been in that place too, you know, there will go years in between certain events and slow progress on the crop circle research, and I will lay some nights, I'll be perfectly frank with you, and I would lay there and simply meditate, and basically in my head say, my hands, are your hands. Where do I go next? What do I do? Nothing happened. Nothing happened for weeks. Nothing happened for months. And then suddenly, bang, between the eyes, something significant. And I don't know the correct answer to your point, but the easy way of pushing it is that as long as you know who you are, this would be my kind of comment, as long as you have resolved who you are, that the ego side of it has been addressed, that you are sincerely coming at whatever your place in this world is from a very deep core sense of knowing who you are, it will happen whenever it's intended to happen. And that's the best I can say.
The universe tends to unfold as it should, I suppose. And another thing that interests me in your book is you outline some great cases about ET abduction. And the most common conclusion for these events is that some type of hybridization program is underway, or it's a type of sterile entity that is trying to regain the ability to breed through using us. But you bring up another possibility, and one that might have happened in the past according to shows like Ancient Aliens, but maybe they're trying to engineer a great leap in human evolution, maybe another great leap in human evolution since the first one didn't seem to take.
Yeah, I think Cynthia is pretty well equipped as a naturopathic physician, you know, to talk in terms of the electrochemical beings that we are. You know, our emotions are affected, you know, literally and physically by the drive that goes on between those two chemistries. You know, so everything that happens to us drives us emotionally to move forward. And I think that what we have is fairly unique. Who are we to know? But probably fairly unique in this part of the cosmos, you know, is of tremendous value to higher beings. And, you know, to manipulate where we're going on this jewel of a planet could be, I say, as easy as shifting our emotional fields, you know, changing the electrochemical composition. And that, of course, can happen by what we see with our eyes, and it can change by what we eat and drink and breathe. So they have there's a great power at the disposal of a higher mind to manipulate mankind without standing in front of them and saying, you know, we've arrived. You know, so I think there are a lot of ways at looking at the evolution of our species, but I couldn't agree with you more that the best part of this should be seen to be very, very visible very, very soon. Because, you know, this crossroads is a really kind of critical place right now.
Very critical, man. And I think in terms of global events, in terms of big public displays, one of the most fascinating things that has occurred in recent years was the Norway spiral. Google it if you're unfamiliar with it, people, because it's very strange. It looks like a hypnotist spiral spinning in the air one night over Norway. And I was so happy to see this in your book. Tell us a bit about your investigation into it and the other spirals like it. Apparently, this isn't the only one. And I was wondering if you thought this was part of that same communication.
Yeah, I think there's an every good chance that it is. We have to think, you know, carefully about whether we should put it in there, to be honest, because we didn't have enough information or evidence that an off-planet intelligence was involved with it. What we felt we had in our research was that we once again had been deceived by our own intelligence about it, and therefore it left open a lot of questions. We became convinced by, you know, an aerospace scientist that I know personally that works, you know, on contract to NASA. This is very much his domain. And he was totally convinced, and hence I became convinced by his own investigation, that on day one, when this extraordinary spiral was seen by many thousands of people in Norway and on the adjacent boundary there into other countries, and Russia too, that this very bizarre phenomena was first of all seen as mysterious. There were no takers and claimers for it. on day one. Day two, because, of course, of the modern technology and communication era, it got out on the internet, a lot of interest, a lot of questions raised. The Russians said nothing to do with us until things started to get quite interesting with in-depth investigation. And then suddenly it was, well, you know, we're going to ask you not to believe us on what we said yesterday, because today we're going to say it is us. Well, the scientists looking at this were very quick to see that the consistent and equal distance between the spiraling arms of that blue, white, and black spiral in the sky were evenly spaced. Now, when a rocket, which is what the Russians' last claim was, out of control, is traveling up and arcing in through the atmosphere, progressing to the outer levels of the atmosphere where it becomes thinner and thinner, the spiral arms that were visible as a result of the fuel ejection, which is taking their claim as true, would not be spaced evenly, because the atmosphere thinning would increase the distance in the spiral as it progressed through the atmosphere. There are other things here too, technically, that discount that claim by the Russians. And then, of course, it really hit rocky ground when another one occurred in Great Britain, and another one became visible over the east coast of Australia, and then in southwest China, all within a short period of time. And so we had something there that clearly we had been lied about, but that because we have no real explanation, enters the camp of potentially large-scale technological projects being undertaken by an unknown on our planet, which puts it into the same realms as the HARP technology that the U.S. government are working with, and in the same kind of table, on the same table as the strange radar returns, which I've done a lot of work on, across an entire continent of Australia. And so that's the reason we brought technology into this book.
Yeah, let's talk about your research in Australia. Can you elaborate on that? You were tracking what you thought was weather manipulation, am I right?
Yes, well, that is what it's boiled down to. But because the government, that is BOM, the Bureau of Meteorology, a department of the Australian government, still, to this day, as I speak to you, they have a disclaimer up on their website which shows the national radar system across the entire continent as still having unresolvable technical interference that they themselves admit now, they rejected this too when I started the research, was even occurring. Well, they first said, well, we can account for that. It's, you know, that what had happened in the southwest of the country 3 years ago was an incomplete radar return, hence the design that came onto the system that was seen on the weather system throughout the Australia. Well, then happened 2, 3, 4, and 5, and then across the entire continent, and they were different patterns. I continued to research and look at not only the patterning, but the sequence of the patterning, and began to see in this patterning that when a certain sequence occurred, there was a dramatic change in the actual weather that was taking place there. And in the most dramatic, and maybe I should just stop here, the most dramatic change was a 1,000-year drought in the southeast, you know, the Sydney, Melbourne, you know, that southeastern quarter there, that 1,000-year drought suddenly turned into a 100-year worse flood in 48 hours. And we now have a situation on this particular part of the subject, really, where the Queensland regional government have conceded publicly under pressure to weather manipulation and weather control experiments that are underway to try and maneuver the weather into position. So, you know, I would leave it as there's a lot that, of course, once again, once you get deception and lies come into the equation, it becomes very, very difficult to resolve. But what we've got are physical changes in our environment, which we're, of course, entitled to know more about, but that it is still possible that they actually don't know what's causing this and that there is some other external involvement. It's an unknown, Greg, and because the book decided in the book to cast a very wide hand, because what we know to be intelligence is breaking in a number of subjects, it's possible that there's a hand here too.
Yeah, man, like you said earlier, it's really tough to discern what the truth is, because when you know that the official story, when the government is lying to you, it opens the floodgates to pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And I love to explore them, guys. I love to go as deep down there as you can, hearing about some of the weirdest possibilities. One thing that ties into the Norway spiral is some researchers are speculating that at the deepest level of black projects, scientists are trying to open portals or doorways to another dimension. Some suggest that's the real purpose of CERN. And I wonder, maybe they know there is this type of intelligence out there, and they're trying to scientifically bridge that dimensional gap. I don't know how close to the reality that is, but it's an interesting idea. What do you think?
Well, I think you're very much in the realm of thinking that is really where I'm heading. That's really where I see future research is not only in human consciousness, but what is it do we know about very, very interesting locations on our planet? We know, for example, that a lot of PhDs threw an awful lot under Bigelow's funding. I'll be talking about this on Coast to Coast in a few weeks' time. At a location in Utah. Range where there was one very, very defined place in the sky where UFOs seemed to be coming through that interface, where animals were being seen to eject that had never been seen before. The Native Americans refer to them in that same area, the Skywalkers. We have also a location of Silbury Hill in southern England, not only where there's been an escalation and development and evolution of the crop circle subject, but the UFO and ET also. And that's in one single field on our planet, where all of these things have happened and are escalating. And I would call both of those locations — these are only two of them that we know of on the planet, I'm sure there are many others, hence, you know, how you raise this is very interesting, because here you have probably a kind of a chakra point on our planet. And if you look at the Gaia theory, a living entity, an organism, a sense of that, and here you have, for reasons not understood, very specific places where all of this happens. And so if it is happening and extraterrestrials are taking advantage of it, utilizing it between a dimensional kind of transition, then there, of course, we're going to be attracting the bees to the honeypot of government and military, who will want to do the same thing for military purposes. And so I don't think your raising this is unreasonable at all.
Wild, man. It's a wild world. And there must be some serious sorcery going on in Hollywood to get people to care about Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus when there's multidimensional portals opening up in the sky. Jesus.
That's right. Yes, I love Miley personally, but there you go.
Well, Cynthia, something closer to your wheelhouse that I wanted to ask about was, a few weeks ago I did a show on Indigo Children, and I wondered what you thought about the idea that there's some type of psychic renaissance going on as part of this big change. And I wondered if you thought you saw that more people experiencing things like out-of-body experiences, precognition, energy healing, stuff like that. Do you feel like the percentage of people that are having those types of experiences is raising?
I think it is raising, and I think it is much more mainstream now than it ever used to be. And one of the ways that I kind of note this is that I work with a lot of professional colleagues who have no time for any of these subjects and would certainly never believe in alternative medicine or energy healing. And yet their spouses come to my practice and have experiences, and they themselves train in energy awareness. And I figure it's only a matter of time before that door opens between it. But, you know, one of the things I would say about that is I don't actually, and I know this is a controversial thing to say, I don't actually believe in the concept of indigo kids. I think all kids are psychic and all kids are special. And we're here in a time when we're born with these faculties that we don't even begin to really appreciate as adults, and we lose them over time due to acculturation, due to parents who are oblivious. Mm-hmm. And there's less closing down of kids today so that kids can shine more and hold that original connection to their authenticity. And I think that we can call those indigo kids and if we want, but I'd rather look at it as, old souls, exist all around us in all forms, and it's an exciting time to be alive, and it's the time rather than a particular breed of children that is making things so very heightened right now.
An interesting observation, if I may just add to that, Greg.
Sure.
Is that, in presenting as I've done now, for so many years in so many places and different parts of the world, that it is intriguing to me how, taking Cynthia's point of old souls, how I can present to a school of school children, 6 and 7 and 8 years old, and then also discuss with native peoples like the Koji people in Colombia that have had no access to television, news items, books, and the things that the Western world are familiar with. None of that. The kids come straight from one lesson into listen to a man who's talking about crop circles and UFOs. And these people, the kids and the Koji and the Hopi and all of these people, will ask the most pertinent questions. They come straight to the quick of where we are, what is relevant to know, what is known, and where we're going, without any of the data that I've spent 30 years gathering myself. And it's like, it simply is that they already know this. They already have this. We all, as Cynthia was saying, already have this. The subconscious knows everything. We're just screwed up by what the conscious is, being given to work with most days.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes I think the lockdown on education is just as much about weeding out energetic ability or shaping our perception of what's possible scientifically or what's rational as it is about shoehorning us into soulless careers working for the corporate machines.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Something else I saw in your book that I really liked was this stuff about the hum. I'm a big fan of this comedian, Joe Rogan. He recently filmed a show called Joe Rogan Questions Everything for the Sci-Fi Channel. And instead of open-minded investigation, it turned out to be largely a debunking show, which really didn't sit well with me. But one of the mysteries they left pretty open was the great mysterious hum. And I guess there are a couple different sounds that people hear. There's the hum, there's the big bang. And I guess I'm wondering, is this part of the same kind of communication with the other, would you say?
Well,
or is this something else?
This is complicated. Because, as you were just about going with this, there are a number of different sounds. And it's hard to think, until you've got really a lot of data, that they're all kind of in some way intermeshed. The Taos hum, 41 hertz, then in New Mexico, very well investigated, governments involved with it, frequencies, sound recordings, etc. Very real. There is no question that it wasn't. Directional, but heard inside of properties rather than outside. They're in Bristol, England, multiple of thousands of people would say the same thing, that inside their home, it was louder than outside. It appeared to be coming from above. And yet here in the United States, One of the investigators decided that he would be able to eliminate at least part of this, the questions raised about, you know, whether it was coming from above, exterior to the atmosphere, or maybe even within the atmosphere, UFO related or whatever, by going underground. And he went down an old mine shaft, hundreds, thousands of feet underground, and it was louder down there than it was above. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff here. I and the bang, and you know, that scary kind of trumpeting sound, some of those have been shown, you know, I've done quite a lot of work on that, to be repeats of the same sound from one location, which was a hoax. So, you know, so you take that piece out. You know, as with all things, Greg, we shoot ourselves in the foot, because there's always going to be a counter step comes in when you're looking at something like this and hoaxing begins. Then the problem becomes even larger, because you've got to eliminate the hoaxing. But overall, my impression has been, actually, there is one other thing to mention, has been, except for what I'm about to say, you know, following this particular comment, is that what I've spoken to so far with regard to the sound, my sense of this is that the major plates of our planet, in other words, Earth changes, is going to account for a significant part of this, that these extraordinary forces that are at play now, hence the increase in major earthquake activity, not only just before we wrote the book, but since the book has been published only 2 months ago, I believe two of above six on the Richter scale today. And so, you know, there is an escalation in this, and the earth plates and the magnetic field dropping away, a lot of environmental situations, with regard to the solar system as well. My sense of it is that the planet itself and the plates are creating some sounds and effects that are resonating in the atmosphere that are causing some of this. But that said, the most intriguing part of the sound subsection of the book here is the 5.2 kilohertz that is being recorded now in a number of crop circles, and in one instance where that sound was actually moving and interacting with a group of us, 11 of us actually, during a surveillance operation, White Crow, in 1989. A report about that particular event was sent to Margaret Thatcher's cabinet and to the head of state, the Queen, and I've, you know, had private correspondence about that. I was there. I was present. I was not the author of the report that was sent off. But that was very definitely interacting with the individuals that were there. And so that sound, you know, we can't account for it all. We've since, incidentally, to leave that perhaps on an interesting note, again referred to in the book, was that since we actually recorded that sound at Operation White Crow, my first co-author and friend Pat Delgado, unfortunately, who has relatively recently passed away, returned on a hunch to investigate that sound. This is relatively recent times. This is just 3 years ago, actually. Returned and recorded the same frequency emanating from the trees in that part of central southern England, in this particular area. That 5.2 hertz, which of course we also know is used by the dolphins and, unfortunately, the submarines of the U.S. Navy.
Yeah, I have heard about that, how it jacks up dolphins. It's really sad.
Yeah.
But, you know, my thoughts about the hum, there is this idea in the alternative research community that there is a sound technology that has been lost, some natural resonance with the earth that can move large objects. Some people believe that's how the pyramids may have been built. There's a place in Florida, Coral Castle. Some people think a sound technology was used to lift large stones there to put things into place. So in the context of getting clues from a hyperintelligence trying to nudge us in a direction that's using technologies that work with the earth rather than against it, so hearing you say that there's a sound frequency emanating from certain crop circles, I wonder if this might just be another layer to the clues left by this intelligence.
Oh, I would completely agree with that. And I'd like to see how you tied all of that together, because we've often felt, too, that it's that that sound vibration that lays the plants over in the formations that are not made by people. And you know, there's no question in the work that I do with healing that sound has an ability to shift energetic and physiologic patterns in people's body, and you know, maybe through the brain and the limbic system. But it certainly requires further investigation.
Here's a hunch, Greg.
Let's have it.
Here's a hunch to leave you in your program because.
Oh man, I'm ready.
This is. I've not said this before, but here's a hunch based upon a lot of data, a lot of information from a number of sources. I believe that there is a very specific frequency that, when utilized with spiritual energy, mm-hmm. earth energy, and human energy in the form of an equilateral triangle and one ratio of the vertical aspect from halfway along that base of that triangle to the peak vertical, there's a ratio along that leg there, and I think that's almost like the moving arm of a rheostat, you might say, in dimming your lights. I think there's a combination in that geometry that I've just described, using those particular aspects of energy, that may well be the key to this whole range of subjects. The UFO, which utilizes that geometry that has been seen and photographed, certain designs we've seen in the fields, certain information we have gleaned from electronic voice phenomena at the Scold experiment in England, Luxembourg, and Germany. This I think, is the hunch to leave with you, because I think in there is going to be something very significant to what you have just stated.
Huh. Well, I don't think I'm smart enough to figure anything out, but you definitely left me something to mull over for a while. Man, it has been great talking with both of you, you know? We've covered a lot of ground. Your book covers way more strange phenomena than I had expected, and I recommend it to anybody who's interested. Would you like to give out your websites or any upcoming events to the people before I let you go?
Oh, thank you, Greg. My website is colinandrews.net. The book, On the Edge of Reality, is available there, but certainly at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. It's also available now in Kindle. My next kind of involvement is going to be in a CD that has actually just been launched, but I hope that the impetus of what's intended for it is going to be seen in the future months. It's called Action Moves People, and I think you might hear a little bit more about that just down the road a little bit. And I think Cynthia has your website.
My website is andrewshealingarts.com or thepathofenergy.com.
And your two books?
Yes, and I have several of my own books for sale on those websites, too, about subtle energy and emotions as a primary translator of subtle energy.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks again. I loved every minute of it. You have my respect. And if you ever need a field investigator in Southern California, I'm in.
Thank you, Greg.
So keep fighting the good fight, guys.
And you, my friend. Thank you very much for having us on.
Great program. Thank you.
Take care. There you have it, folks. Colin and Cynthia Andrews on the Edge of Reality. They're good people. I liked that. And I liked the book. Get your donations in for the THC Money Bomb. Please keep sharing the show. Tell your friends. Review it where you can. Do whatever you feel comfortable with, guys. But let's grow this bitch. Your move, Rockefeller.
Ben Horizon, take me with you. Captain Miller, won't you take my hand? Gates of hell, way back to the ranks, and wish them well. Hey,
back to the ship and head on to Earth. Get our well-deserved leave back on Event Horizon.